Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer, the radio show with Robert Moss. This is where we celebrate, we affirm the power of dreams, synchronicity, and imagination, three things that we too often dismiss as only a dream, just my imagination, only a coincidence, but are vital sources of knowledge and wisdom and energy for soul and survival. Our guest today is going to be Ryan Hurd. He's the leading dream researcher. He has a very interesting website called dreamstudies.org, and his book is Sleep Paralysis, A Guide to Hypnagogic Visions and Visitors of the Night. Actually, I want to talk about hypnagogia, what goes on in those in-between states, those liminal states between sleep and awake, in a broader context, and I think Ryan will join me in that. You know, we spend far too little time, by my observation, in the liminal zone, in the twilight zone between sleep and awake. You probably heard me on this show quote, with high approval in the past, the advice of Tinkerbell to Peter Pan in the Disney movie of long ago. Remember? Peter's sad because Tink is going away, and the fairy friend says to Peter Pan, look for me in the place between sleep and awake. That's where I'll be waiting for you. So I followed that fairy advice for a long time. This liminal third hour space between sleep and awake is a great place to become a conscious dreamer. It's a great place for experiences of many kinds, which are not to be dubbed hallucinations, because they're going on in your mind. You're not usually fantasizing about somebody coming through the door in a physical body, but you are free to roam the multiverse. You're free to embark on lucid dream adventures. You are open, perhaps, to encounters with inner and transpersonal guides and so much more. Ryan, do we have you now?
I'm here.
Welcome. Well, I just introduced you. I praised your book, which is a very useful book. I must say, Ryan, until I read your book and started looking at what appears on social media and websites about sleep paralysis, I had no idea that so many adults are plagued by this problem. I don't think I've suffered sleep paralysis since I was 14 years old. That was a very memorable experience. But it's not something I've made a speciality of since. One of the things about your book, and of course our discussion is going to be about far more than sleep paralysis, because we're both very active dreamers and you're a very active dream researcher. You know, one of the things that you write about in your book, which I like, is beyond all the common sense advice about sleep patterns and diet and all that stuff, is you write that, you know, if you're a game for it and will stay with an experience of what people call sleep paralysis, you might find you have the portal opening to lucid dreaming and many other adventures in the multidimensional universe, so that an experience like this, where your body is asleep though your mind is awake, can be a kind of private initiation. That's one of the things I most like about your approach to these things. So tell me, you say that your interest in this particular phenomenon started at 14, an age I remember for sleep paralysis. How has your view and understanding of the phenomenon evolved over all the years?
Yeah, well, it's such a fascinating topic, because it does evolve. Everyone who practices or feels like they are a victim of sleep paralysis, I feel, has an initiation process in which they sort of reclaim their power and realize that what this thing that's happening to them is actually, as you say, a portal to extraordinary states of consciousness. And that's a process that can take years, sometimes decades for people, but the process is shortened, you know, very much so if you know what's happening and you know the spectrum of possibilities. And so for myself, experiencing sleep paralysis as a teenager and as a young adult, it was horrific. I was being held down by a menacing force. I was so fearful. I, you know, found myself thinking that I was being haunted by demons, which was kind of an interesting thing to think because I was a avowed atheist at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was cognitive dissonance happening at the same time that I'm having these experiences. And then what I discovered over the years is that other possibilities come to light when we open up with sort of a hopeful, grounding energy of essentially surrender to what's happening. And when we learn to surrender, then there's all these new things that can happen.
Yeah, one of the things that you write about is that this sleep paralysis phenomenon, misnomer, of course, because you're not asleep, your mind is awake, your body is asleep, but this phenomenon can educate you in the fact that consciousness is not confined to the body because your mind is awake. And as you say, it can become the entry into an intentional out-of-body experience if you can find a way of getting yourself out of the body. I'm startled that so many people think that they are sort of trapped in the body as if in the grave. And actually, this is sort of stretching things in a certain historical direction. But I sometimes wonder, Ryan, whether some of the experiences of sleep paralysis are actually quite atavistic in the sense that they evoke memories of being buried alive, which was a real concern back in the ages when people couldn't read the vital signs in all the ways that we do today. And I mean, it's a theme, that the horror theme that runs through Edgar Allan Poe and other period horror writers, that people actually had reasons to worry that people would pronounce them dead before they actually were and bury them alive. I wonder whether some percentage of these experiences, which very much evoke the feeling of being airless in a cramped and confined space with dark, formless things around you, whether they actually are throwback to the multi-generational memories of, you know, how things might have been once upon a time when we could be thrown into a grave without being properly checked. That's just one of the thoughts that occurs to me.
Yeah, well, that's so spooky. And, you know, there's something perhaps to that, especially because if there's these other connections with sleep paralysis and the vampire myths in so many cultures, in which, you know, if you look at Bram Stoker's classic tale, the narrator experiences sleep paralysis when Dracula comes to him. He can't move, he's laying down, and then there's a figure standing over the bed who, you know, wants to do him harm. I mean, that's the classic sleep paralysis. Makes me think that Bram Stoker actually was an experiencer himself.
Your timing in making that analogy is rather good. I'm going back to Romania this weekend. I've taught at the edge of Transylvania, 2 kilometers from Dracula's castle, for 7 years, Ryan. Actually, I will point out, Bram Stoker picked Transylvania because no one had ever heard about it. He thought he was safe. The vampire is actually not a quintessentially Romanian story. The werewolf is a quintessentially Romanian story. So I've got to speak up for Transylvania here. But I will say it might or might not be related to our larger theme, that if there is a typical Romanian dream, the typical Romanian dream is not of a vampire, but it is of someone who is not a vampire, not necessarily evil. It might be a beloved family member or a spiritual guide, rising from the grave, rising out of the grave and appearing to the dreamer in usually a positive guide, the guy's not a menacing guide, with information. I mean, it might be startling to begin with if it's a dead person who you thought was safely in the ground, but it's not a vampire story. It's a sort of resurrection story. It's a sort of revenant kind of story. But it usually lacks the thrill of horror. So to apply this to the themes that you write about so elegantly and usefully, I mean, maybe if we could tamp down our sense of horror and be open to the visitor, the stranger, as you call it, shape-shifting and presenting itself in a different guise, we would all do better.
Yeah,
you know,
well,
I'm very interested in the whole realm of hypnagogia. I would say that probably most of my life, my most creative hours have been spent in this, though, and you write, as other researchers do, about how short a time most people spend in between sleep and awake, either coming or going into sleep or out of sleep. I often spend most of my night in this phase, Ryan. I mean, I would admit I'm not typical of anything, but I'm just astonished as I look at the dream literature as well as the diurnal and nocturnal activities of people by a relatively little space of time that people give to this zone and how little valuation it's received, even in the dream literature. I mean, in the dream literature, it's supposedly you're only lucid dreaming if you're asleep and aware that you're dreaming while asleep. I mean, this has never been my attitude. For me, the prime time for conscious or lucid dreaming is actually when you're in that fertile liminal zone between sleep and awake. You're familiar with this zone. What do you do with it? How do you value it? How do you use it in your own life?
Oh, I love hypnagogia myself, and it was one of my early entryways into the sort of the dream magical worlds as well. I love to sort of be immersed in those three-dimensional geometric spaces that come in hypnagogia that can serve as portals to dreams and to out-of-body experiences. And so for me, something I've done since I was a young boy is to close my eyes as I'm drifting off to sleep and to notice the lights that gather and the sort of multicolor, you know, cosmic snow. You know, it looks like the way that a TV set looks when it's not set to a channel, right? You've got this static going on. And that static self-organizes and becomes a pattern that one can enter into. One can enter into a symbol. And that's when it gets interesting. That's when we have these journeys where we can meet guides or ancestors or simply go traveling, as you say. So that's been my practice for decades, and in these days, because it's always different, right? It's always changing. These days, I find that I am, when I enter this state, that my consciousness drifts down and into the earth rather than going up and out. And I've been exploring some very interesting, vast spaces that seem to be more of an underworldly dimension.
Okay, well, the way up is the way down. Want to give us more of a report of one of these experiences?
So they're all different, of course, but what's interesting is the vastness of the space that I enter. And so when I sort of emerge away from my sensed physical body and I'll drift through the mattress and the house floors, and the air becomes cool. You know, there's this sense where it really feels that I'm entering a new space, like my breath is cool, bringing in cold, clean air. And often I can't see at first, and it's completely void, and then what happens is that I sense these distant structures, and they're so immense. I feel like I'm in... Yes, a void that's almost infinite and yet contained at the same time. And then sometimes what happens, for instance, one that happened more recently, is I began to gather up speed and began traveling quickly through the void as through a tunnel, and then emerged awake and breathing again, but with this sense of open possibility. It's very difficult to describe because it was non-dual, you know what I mean? So, but the emotionality that came with it, it was just so expansive.
Do you meet other people or other beings in these in-between states?
I usually don't, in those particular spaces, meet other beings. I tend to have meetings with the more typical visitation, say, where I have sleep paralysis and then I feel a sensed presence and then that presence materializes as someone. And that's when I have those kind of meetings. And one time I had a meeting like that in which I was invited to go on a journey with them. And I mentally said yes, and suddenly I found myself transported and flying alongside this person over vast fields of clouds and mists and oceans of lava. And I felt like I was being taken on a tour of the various, scapes that are existing above what I would call the astral plane or something.
Right.
Some space
right.
that was beyond me, that's transpersonal or archetypal in nature.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, I think that it's been understood in many lineages and mystery orders, going back for thousands of years, that this in-between space is the space where we are most easily contacted, most easily reached by higher intelligences, actually easily reached by intelligences of any kind, and this is a psychic zone of easy interaction with other minds. But in the history of discovery, of high intellectual discovery and spiritual discovery, the zone has always been ranked very important. And I must say, the most important spiritual and intellectual conversations of my life have taken part in this zone, and often, as with your experience, somebody who makes contact in this zone, who I test and learn to trust if I don't know them already, will take me on an extraordinary series of adventures. I mean, in my book Dream Gates, I describe how a fellow I identified as G2, that is in no way his actual identity, who spoke for a well-known Western mystery order, approached me with interesting signals, which could be verified and tested, and then took me on a tour of a number of astral and, let's say, beyond astral environments for the knowledge of the geography of the larger reality. And it started with a signal, a calling card, so to speak, an audio calling card in that liminal space between sleep and awake. Much of my life continues to be influenced and guided by experiences of this kind. So I value anybody and any work that draws our attention to this, because not only are we missing, so many of us, through our prevailing dream drought in our culture, not only are we missing all those hours of REM sleep and other kinds of dream sleep, we are missing the opportunity to do the wonderful creative things that have often been done in this in-between state. So tell us about your current activities, Ryan, and if you like, tell us a little bit about your daily or weekly or even monthly practice of working with dreams and similar experiences. I mean, is there a pattern to your days in terms of when you journal things and when you act upon them and when you talk about them, or is it more spontaneous than that?
Yeah, so at this point in my life, with having young children and a disrupted sleep schedule, I find that I'm mostly having spontaneous experiences and not spending a lot of energy doing incubations or setting I don't simply have the time or the mental energy for these adventures. And so I have to be okay with what comes to me. And they still do luckily come to me in their own time. Dreams have their own way of showing up when they're needed. And so really I'm in a process of just essentially discernment and waiting and patience and enjoying the experiences that I do have. And it's been an interesting time for me to do so, because in the past, as you know, Robert, with lucid dreaming, and I teach lucid dreaming about how to be very proactive about having more of these kind of experiences, conscious dreaming experiences, out of body, and for me to be able to take a step back, it's been lovely, because what I found is that the experiences that I do have are very powerful and evocative, whereas when I'm incubating a lot of conscious dream experiences, and say I have three or four, in a week, they aren't that powerful experiences necessarily individually. And they might even sometimes be more creative or exploratory. But when I'm just having spontaneous experiences and I'm in a waiting place for them, they are much more poignant, much more emotionally strong. And I feel like I'm meeting the dream more than halfway. It's like, this is something I need to pay attention to, and here it is. And so that's been my experience recently, and I love that. I love that there's a sort of a time and a place for different ways of being with this life practice.
Right. Well, I will always treasure the gift of the spontaneous sleep dream that we don't ask for and may not want, because it comes with a sense of objectivity, it comes with a sense of timeliness, it comes with a sense that it is custom-tailored for us. So however much time I spend in other states of consciousness, I will always give very high value to that kind of spontaneous sleep dream, which, as I say, brings us that sense of objectivity. Just as I give very high value to the moment of synchronicity, dreaming with eyes wide open on the roads of this world, when the universe becomes personal, then you know that something has just come through, which might, of course, mirror back your thoughts and feelings, but sometimes, again, brings that sense of objectivity and even a spontaneous intervention. We're going to take a break shortly, Ryan. When we come back, I would like you to just lay out for the people listening, because many are interested, how you encourage people to approach lucid dreaming. I'd like to hear your definition of lucid dreaming. I'd like you to share with us, if you would, some of the techniques that you find productive when you're helping people to get into that practice. So we have a moment before the break. How do you define lucid dreaming? What does the term mean to you?
Sure. So I use the sort of standard definition of knowing that you're dreaming in the dream, and that is the shortest definition that I know that works for most researchers who have done the work in the field before.
You didn't use the word sleep.
Exactly.
You did not use the word. This is what I'm looking for, because so many of these descriptions use the word sleep. Knowing that you're dreaming inside a sleep dream, you actually didn't use the word sleep. Is that significant or not?
It is, because I think the process of lucidity, you know, the realization is that we have these experiences while in quote-unquote wakefulness as well. And I think reverie and daydreaming, in other sort of, you know, meditative states, which people classify as wakefulness, I mean, really, we're in that imaginal zone.
Okay. We're talking to Ryan Hurd. He's the author of a book called Sleep Paralysis, a useful, elegant book. His website is dreamstudies.org. If I have that wrong, he'll correct me. We'll be back after the break. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Moss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Moss has a deep engagement with the dream world, and now you can take a crash course from this master of active dreaming at your own pace. That's right. You can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3-DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dreamwork techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
Vistaprint. I'm sure you've heard the name. Over 17 million small businesses and consumers have used Vistaprint for printed products, ranging from business cards and brochures to invitations and thank you cards. Why? Because Vistaprint has the lowest price guarantee, and you can design your products with templates or upload your design. And they have free products. 3-day rush service and satisfaction is always guaranteed. Try Vistaprint. Just go to the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on the Vistaprint logo.
When you're looking for bedding, department store prices can shock you. Well, be shocked no more. Sell steak cheap, not cheap steak. That's the motto of Anna's Linens. Although they don't sell steak, they do sell the best bedding, bath, and home decor items. They strive to provide their merchandise at extreme value to their customers, and they do it. Great everyday prices on everything and military discounts. Plus, if you visit them online, they have clearance items and internet specials. Visit them online now at HealthyLife.net's advertiser page.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
Welcome back. This is Way of the Dreamer with Robert Mouse. You might pop over to my website, mousedreams.com. We've posted a sketch of my calendar for the whole of next year, details to be filled in. Our live guest today is Ryan Hurd, a leading dream researcher. His website, very useful educational site, is dreamstudies.org, and his book in a spanking new second edition is Sleep Paralysis. Ryan, we started talking about lucid dreaming, how we define it, how we approach it, how you help people to become lucid dreamers, and I think we're actually in agreement that it's not just a phenomenon of waking up to the fact that you're dreaming inside a sleep dream. It might be about waking up to the fact that you're dreaming in many states of consciousness. From my point of view, of course, which is conventional, mainstream conservative, as you know, we're dreaming all the time. I'm dreaming right now. I have a phone in my hand, which I'm trying to make keep myself audible to you. But from my point of view, I'm dreaming right now in the sense that I can participate to some extent in the creation of my reality. I know my attitudes will do that. And I want to be alert to bending or stretching the borders of possibility at every turning, just as I would want to do in a sleep dream or a lucid dream. But let's tell us, you teach people how to become lucid dreamers. Tell us how you approach that. How do you help people get into this?
Right. So when people come to me to learn lucid dreaming, I find that they usually have some kind of unmet intention that they're striving for. And so what I ask them is, you know, why do you want to be more conscious in your dream life and by extension in your waking life and in your big life or your cosmic life? What is missing? What are you pushing for? What do you need answers for? Clarity on, you know. So I think that intentionality piece is so important to clarify and to make conscious as people move into the different kinds of activities to do to encourage these more conscious dreams that happen in the sleep state. Without a strong intention, I find that everything else just doesn't really work well. And so once I work with people on their intention, I generally teach a couple of practices, some of them which come out of course, the library of Stephen LaBerge in his work with encouraging lucid dreams over the years, because I find that his practices are still fabulous and absolutely important to use. And one of them is he popularized an activity by the German researcher Paul Foley that's called the reality check. And I love this concept. And the idea is that in waking life, to 5 or 10 times a day, to ask oneself, am I dreaming right now? And to seriously contemplate that. And with that, how do I know that I'm dreaming? How can I test reality in the sense of, am I dreaming in a sleeping dream versus a waking consensual dream? Robert, as you would say. And there's a couple of ways that, of course, that dreaming is different than waking life, but less so than one would realize. People would say, oh, I should know if I'm dreaming or not when I'm awake. But we make the same mistake cognitively when we're dreaming, which will say, oh, I'm not in a dream right now because, you know, my office, everything looks clear around me and I'm clear thinking. But those kind of perceptual things don't really help us. We can have false positives. And so one of the things I tell people is to try holding their nose and then trying to breathe. And this, you try this in a dream and one can still breathe, even though they're holding one's nose, because their sleeping body, they're still be able to breathe without a problem, even though in the dream world, they aren't. And so there's little differences, little things like that. So the reality check is a cognitive habit to just be like, hey, am I dreaming right now? And of course, the bigger philosophical piece to that, right, is waking up to our big dreaming lives, our waking lives, and noticing that we're not so lucid in waking life either, that we go kind of through some habits and some patterns that are pretty kind of like we're in automatic. And so doing the reality check helps us stir stir out of that as well.
Yes, I notice lots of people are in the condition of sleepwalkers in waking life and need to wake up from the sort of insensate kind of dreaming that goes on. There's something that I want to ask you, Ryan. I don't know if you've had an experience of this or not, but we, in dreaming, in astral travel, in reverie, in shamanic journeying, we sometimes find ourselves in other realities that have their own physics. In other words, you know, you can't jump off a mountaintop because you have a body, although it's not your regular body, which might be broken. I spend a certain amount of time in other realities which, I repeat, do have their own physics. So I might have abilities that I don't have in ordinary reality, like being able to breathe underwater and hold my nose and do what you recommended. But, for example, I can't fly, even though I can fly intentionally almost whenever I will myself to in an imaginal space, in conscious dreaming and shamanic journeying. But I find myself in parallel worlds and other realities that, I repeat, have their own physics. So to ask, am I dreaming, is one way of bringing myself aware that I'm not in ordinary reality. And yet, across the sort of spectrum of options, the spectrum of journey experiences, I also often find myself in dream reality, dream spaces that are so ordinary, I don't mean boring, but so realistic, so literalistic, so this-worldly, that coming back to them is just like stepping from one room into another. And it's initially a little bit hard to say which is more real than the other. So these are quandaries and questions that arise. I guess for me, the fundamental question is not, am I dreaming? I assume that I'm dreaming all the time, but my fundamental question for myself and others is, are you exercising choice? Mm-hmm. Are you rejecting any tendency to be the victim or the passive consumer or the passive observer? Are you exploring what is available to you with some sense of the possibility and some application of intention and will? I love the fact that you started by talking about intention. That is always where we must begin. So if someone wants to be a lucid dreamer, it's appropriate, as you counsel us, to ask them why. What's your intention? What do you want to do? You want to go and sex with a movie star? You want to go and fly to another planet? I'm just sort of riffing on what you said. But,
yeah.
But these experiences of mine in which in my journal, I sometimes just write down just so. By just so, I mean this was literalistic, this is realistic, whether it's a world like this one or another world. That is sometimes my first comment on the feeling that a certain dream experience gives me, which just so has its own physics.
Yeah, so the first thing that comes to mind is how important it is to just have that awareness that I can make a choice right now. And, of course, that goes back to sleep paralysis. I'm not a victim right now.
Yeah.
I have a choice.
And
that is the most important thing with lucid dreaming, and that doesn't mean dream control. And of course, that's the gross kind of culture of lucid dreaming. The marketing hype is about controlling one's dream, which is not what I'm interested in at all. But rather, what is my state of awareness, and can I make the choices that are appropriate to this world that I'm in right now? And like you say, there's different kinds of physics, different kinds of worlds. And so just noticing one's awareness in these worlds, that's a form of lucidity.
Yes. Yes, I love these moments when I'm just roaming around, wandering in this liminal space, and something happens that has its objective importance. I'm wandering through a parade of faces, a familiar phenomenon in the hypnagogic zone, and suddenly I'm on a bridge, and I think, am I on a bridge across the Bosphorus? And a beautiful woman, whose only her eyes are visible through a long veil, says to me, are you Turkish or Romanian? And at that moment, I have the shock of something beyond my ordinary fantasies speaking to me, and it leads to a further adventure. We're talking to Ryan Hurd about many forms of dreaming, including lucid and liminal dreaming and what we do in sleep paralysis. We're back, I hope, to talk after the break about dreaming with children. He has young children. I've learned a lot from mine when they were small. You're listening to We're the Dreamer with Robert Nuss.
For all your live or pre-recorded webcasting needs, come to earthchannel.com. Get your web-based message out to a select group or the whole world. It's easy. A pioneer in webcasting, earthchannel.com provides the best products and services to big corporations and government users. And now, this same technology is available to you. They have the best earthcast encoders, servers, and products to meet your technical needs. But wait, don't want to mess with technical stress? No problem. They'll do it for you. EarthChannel.com is your answer. You can use webcasting for lots of things, like advertising, marketing, customer support, training, and don't forget, web radio and TV. In fact, you're listening to a live Earthcast right now, so come to EarthChannel.com. Actualize your audio or video webcasting needs today. You can't beat the friendly service or the price. Call earthchannel.com at 800-849-8978. That's 800-849-8978.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Welcome back. This is Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. Do pop over to mossdreams.com and have a look at my calendar for the many months ahead through the end of 2020. Lots of things going on all over the place. We're in the midst of a new online video course for the Shift Network. I'll be launching a new one in November, so you can consider that. And our wonderful guest today is Ryan Hurd. His website is dreamstudies.org. He has a very useful and elegant book called Sleep Paralysis, which is actually more than about that phenomenon, concerning and important though it is. And Ryan also is blessed to have two young children. I understand they're 2 years and 7 years old. And I want Ryan to talk to us about the experience of sharing dreams and stories with kids, because as a father, I learned so much from my three daughters when they're at that early age. So, Ryan, what is your experience of talking about dreams and stories? When my kids were small, we often didn't distinguish between a dream and a story. It's good enough to hear the story. What's your experience of talking to your kids and supporting their dreams and imagination?
I love asking my son when he first wakes up, do you remember what just happened to you? Do you remember a dream?
Yeah.
And it's one of my favorite things to do. And you know, most days he doesn't, but sometimes he does. And I remember very clearly the first time he told me, he woke up and spontaneously told me a dream. He was 2 years old. And at this point, he probably only had maybe 50 or less words, maybe 100 words tops, that he was vocalizing, including his own name. And I remember he woke up out of a nap, and he says, flower. And I said, oh, did you just experience a flower? He said, yeah, Connor, flower. And he mimicked smelling a flower.
Oh.
And my heart just burst open.
Oh, yeah. That's precious.
It was just such a wonderful, you know, way to start the journey.
Yes.
And of course,
yes,
kids' dreams are dark. Kids' dreams are full of nightmares and monsters, and it's a wonderful way to connect with them about fear and about sort of the interior process of what they're going through. And sometimes what I've found is that words aren't always the best way to get access to it, and so I'll say, hey, do you want to draw it?
Yeah.
So he'll draw what has happened to him. And then interestingly, his mood will shift almost immediately. You know, it's like externalizing it and bringing it out to the social realm lifts him and lifts the dream, so it's not weighing so heavily on him. And so that's sort of my personal experience with working with my own kids.
Yeah. When it's been a bad dream or nightmare in the sense there's content and it doesn't end well or doesn't end at all, leaving it broken as nightmares usually are, have you ever tried carrying the story forward, helping Connor to take the story into a new chapter, doing something like that, or does that happen spontaneously when he makes the picture?
That hasn't happened so with my own kids, but I've had similar experiences working with other children's nightmares. One girl who I was working with for a while, she was 8 or 9 years old, was having repetitive nightmares. And we would do drawing, and then we would do things like tearing up the monster and burning its image. And what happened is that over a period of weeks, her night terrors or nightmares began to lessen. And then they would come back. Of course, you know, our nightmares are never gone. They just sort of change forms. But I found that, but working with them and externalizing them seemed to have an effect on how hard she took the dream, how hard it affected her. Even though sometimes the content wouldn't change so much, her reaction and her embrace of the characters itself would change, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I noticed with my youngest daughter, with whom I had daily dialogue about dreams, I was privileged to do this for several years, and she was very small. She had the innate ability to stay with a scary image and try to deal with it. I mean, one of the dreams, famous or notorious in the family, just before she turned 4 years old, she comes to my space at 3 o'clock in the morning. I keep vampire hours when I'm at home, so we talked about vampires earlier. So Sophie comes, says, "Dad, I'm having a terrible dream." And I look at her, "Yes, two yucky monsters are after me." And I look at her, she doesn't seem to be too scared. And I say, "So what's happening?" She says, "Oh, I put on a dragon costume and I chased them back." And that's not because she's my daughter. That's the natural shamanism of the young child. And I found very early on with my own kids and with other kids, sometimes if it is a broken dream, a bad dream, an unresolved nightmare, if we can find some way to carry on the dream, whether it's by story making within the family, adding another chapter, doing a picture, or by theater, if you've got a group and do play acting. I remember I was leading a group of dream sessions for families. There's a little boy there, 5 years old, probably was terrified by T-Rex in a dream. We started acting it out. He picked someone to play T-Rex, and inside the theater, inside the enactment, he remembered that T-Rex had actually been his friend in another dream or a fantasy. So we see him embrace T-Rex, recognize his own power, and it's all solved as it's embodied and acted out in the room. So that sometimes works. Of course, there are formless, dreadful nights where the stuff really does have to be expunged, released as quickly as possible, and maybe making an image and destroying or burning it will do. Our friend Jordy Boris is on the show with me the other day. He was talking about how with one of his children, they have a rag doll which they named Moon, which has an apron with a big pocket. And when his little girl is really scared of something in the night, they'll get her to make a picture or do something from the dream and put it in the pocket of the Moon doll, and overnight the Moon doll is going to eat the bad dream, eat its energy and swallow it. And this is charming, and it's also got an ancient pedigree, this kind of stuff, literally giving some consigning an unwanted energy from the night to some kind of protective figure to devour is still practiced in a number of cultures. There are figures like this in Japan. So there's a whole spectrum of things we need to do, but the big point I would like to suggest, Brian, and maybe you will find yourself in agreement, is by my observation, adults actually have more to learn from young children about dreams and imagination the other way around. Our kids need our support. They need our love. They need our hugs. They need our constancy. They need our help to get the paper to do the drawing and put it on the refrigerator. But actually, with the primal power and uncensored power of their imagination and the direct access to the dream source, I would say in general they have more to teach adults than adults have to teach them.
Yes, it's a closer lived reality for children, I believe. And when we acknowledge that unspoken part of their lives, I think it helps them become more fully who they are. And rather than pushing down those vital aspects of their life and and their fears and their personality and everything else that's going on for them. It's remarkable the difference it makes when one opens up to the power of dreams. And I've worked with teens in dream groups before, and I found it to have a similar process. You know, teenagers and as well as eighth, ninth graders, adolescents are powerful dreamers. They're very lucid dreamers as well, and they're like, oh, and you know, we sit in a circle and we tell each other our dreams, and everybody is energized when we leave the circle. And of course, what happens is that those children or youth who don't often have dreams will then have a dream, you know, the next night.
Right.
And they'll call me or text me and tell me about their dream, and so it just starts this. You know, it doesn't take much, right, for the dream world to come back. All we have to do is acknowledge it.
Right. All right. We're talking to Ryan Hurd, dream researcher, author of Sleep Paralysis. We'll be back to talk some more after the break. This is Robert Nash, you're listening to Way of the Dreamer.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
Gingivitis, gum disease, words you don't want in your mouth. But according to the American Dental Association, 3 out of every 4 adults will develop gum disease. Now there's an all-natural way to fight back. Introducing the Natural Dentist Herbal Gum Therapies. Developed by a dentist and clinically tested by a leading university, the Natural Dentist Herbal Gum Therapies Daily Oral Rinse and Toothpaste was proven to kill the germs that cause gum disease better than the leading brands. Regular use was proven to reduce gingivitis and bleeding gums. The Natural Dentist contains herbs like echinacea and aloe vera and has no alcohol or sugar or harsh chemicals. The Natural Dentist is guaranteed to work or your money back. You can find the Natural Dentist at most drug and health stores, including Trader Joe's, Save-On, Walgreens, and Long's Drug Stores, as well as most health stores, including Whole Foods Markets and Wild Oats. Call 800-615-6895 or visit www.thenaturaldentist.com for more info.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
Welcome back. This is Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. Do go to mossdreams.com, my website, and check out my guest Ryan Hurd's website, dreamstudies.org. We've been talking about lucid dreaming, amongst other things. And Ryan, I want to offer you what, for me, are the two royal roads to lucid dreaming. Although, since sleep is not essential to either of these paths, I find that some of the writers on lucid dreaming might not find this terribly relevant. But I think the easiest ways to become a lucid dreamer to start out lucid and stay that way. In other words, start from a conscious state, an aware and conscious state. So what I like to do is to start out in the hypnagogic zone, which we've been discussing on and off. Sleep researchers call it hypnagogic if you're approaching sleep, and hypnopompic if you're coming away from sleep. We can call it all twilight zone or liminal dreaming, threshold dreaming. It's one of my favorite states of consciousness, as I said, and I notice any night, really, often in the middle of the night, after I'm often awake in the middle hours of the night, 3-4 o'clock in the morning, if I just relax in bed in a state of relaxed attention, with or without any attention other than to be open to the images that rise and fall, some
and things will develop, will eventually give me a menu of possibilities, and I can go off on a lucid dream adventure if I choose one of the portals or landscapes that are given to me, or I can suggest to myself a place that I would like to go, a place from my imaginal life, a place from my memories, a friend at a distance, or something like that. And the other royal road to lucid dreaming for me, which might correspond to what I just said, it might take place in the same liminal space of consciousness, is dream reentry. You have a dream or something like a dream which has energy for you. You let it be the doorway for a journey. In the workshops, we use shamanic drumming to fuel and focus that journey, but at home, you can do it simply with inner intention and focus and the energy and traction of a dream that has some powerful mystery or even terror for you. So to start off with a dream for which you may or may not have just awakened, or it might be one you've left unresolved for years, and to decide that that will be your threshold, that will be your portal for a wide awake shamanic dream journey, that's another way of lucid dreaming. Now, but if lucid dreaming is defined as being peculiar to states of sleep, I guess all of this isn't terribly relevant, but you and I seem to understand that lucid dreaming is not confined to states of sleep. Anyway, I called my first book Conscious Dreaming, not Lucid Dreaming, because I couldn't be bothered with all these distinctions and definitions. I want to be lucid and conscious as far as possible at all times. So anyway, so that's the way that I approach this with my students. Learn to spend more time in the twilight zone and learn to go back into a dream or something like a dream that has energy for you. And that's your road to becoming a lucid dream in the ways that fascinate me.
Yeah, and you know, one of the ways that really works well for me is going back into a dream, a sleeping dream in the middle of the night.
Yes.
And so if I am awake and I am up for a little while and then I descend back into the dream world with that dream that I just had, or a dream that I had many years ago, and I want to re-enter that dream, the conditions are perfect around 3-4 in the morning.
Yeah.
Just slip straight back into those same spaces and go into the dream that way.
Absolutely. That is prime time. 3-4 in the morning, that is prime time for this kind of dreaming and for going back into a dream. I will never forget what happened to me at 3 o'clock in the morning in a cabin by a lake in Vermont many years ago when I came out of a dream in which I'd been having a pleasant lunch with a very elegant couple who'd come from the East. They were royals, traveling royals. And as I've had enough lunch, and I leave the table and in so doing leave the dream. And as I'm leaving the dream, an old friend of mine comes puffing up and says, Robert, have you forgotten you're supposed to record the conversation? And I'm now awake. I think, what conversation? I look back inside the dream. I'm just looking and just got my head back inside the dream, and I find a large manila envelope with 3 documents in it, one of which explains the royals at the table as the prince and princess of Fars, a name for the old Persian heartland. And the other is a list of 20 questions I'm supposed to ask them. I'm on my bed in the moonlight. I go back into the dream, and I've got the yellow legal pad and the pen on the bed, and I'm inside the dream talking and asking the questions, writing down the answers. I got through 9 of the answers before I had to leave that and go outside and lie on a floating dock on the water. But that conversation, Ryan, for me, is still the most profound spiritual conversation I've ever had about the nature of the soul, its exile from its original homeland. It is steeped in a particular tradition, a Persian tradition, which is one of many that have called me in my dreams and liminal states. And it is for me an example of what becomes available at 3 or 4 in the morning if we do not fall asleep, if we stay awake to the larger realities and the powers and intelligences of the larger realities that are seeking us where we can be found. And that's another thing missing from some of the discussion of this, I find. This is not a religious point of view. It's not even necessarily a spiritual point of view. It's a point of view based on practice. But I would like us to recognize more openly in some of the literature and discussion that there are larger intelligences, higher intelligences that are actively seeking us, and that these in-between spaces are spaces where we can more easily be found.
Yeah, absolutely. And your experience, what you were just telling me, reminds me of some of those dream visions that Emanuel Swedenborg would have and wrote down.
Yes.
And documented all those years ago.
Yeah, Swedenborg is a poster boy. Of course, he wrote in Latin, and in translation, his texts are still incredibly awkward, and there are a couple of reasonable early translations. He's very hard to follow.
And, of course, he's an 18th century Swedish scholar, and it's all steeped in angelology and demons and things. But nonetheless, Sweden's wakeful ecstasies, as he called them, are an absolute model from a Western practitioner of how far this liminal space of hypnagogia can take you, because, as you remind us, most of his discoveries were made in the space that he spent hours a day in his bathrobe, in his robe, traveling the world under angelic guidance, if we are to believe him, you know, in the zone of hypnagogia. So we might have different designs, we might have different agendas, we might just want to hang out with movie stars and go flying like birds, but all of this is available. And I just am astonished sometimes by, you know, how many people are still asleep to what frontiers of consciousness are beckoning us. So thank you for your work in educating us about dreams and sharing your own personal experiences of liminal dreaming and helping and lucid dreaming and helping people to get beyond the terrors of the stranger who appears in sleep paralysis. We'll be back after the break with Ryan Hurd briefly to say thank you and see if he's got any last thought to share with us. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Muff.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
You've been listening to Way of the Dreamer. This is Robert Moss. Our great guest today is Ryan Hurd. Ryan, do you have any last words of wisdom for us?
I was just thinking about, Robert, about this wonderful discussion about autonomous intelligences and voices that are larger than ours. And I remembered one of the most provocative experiences I've had in the liminal state, which was I was in the void and I heard a woman's voice say, "Choose a sign and enter through it." And for me, that's been my mantra ever since.
Yes, that's very good. Yes, that can take any of us dreaming on it in interesting directions. Thank you for that. So thank you, Ryan, and to everybody, may your best dreams come true, and may you remember them.